Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to be talking about the Kingdom of God. We're going to be looking at Genesis 26. We've gone through Genesis 25, but there's a lot in that Genesis 25. And you can always take things a little bit deeper, because these aren't just stories of somebody wandering around in the desert, of Jacob and Esau. Esau liked to go hunting, and we have this picture that these guys just lived these kind of isolated lives. Yet we see also in the text, not emphasized, but also in the text, where whole armies can be mustered up overnight by people like Abraham when Jacob is coming back from being with Laban for 21 years. That he's traveling with a whole entourage of people. And that Jacob had received the blessings, supposedly, of all the servants of Abraham. So he would literally be, because Isaac received everything, and now Isaac is passing things on, and they talk about them increasing in wealth and servants. And then, of course, we can look at those words, servants. Are they part of a city-state type human resource servitude where everybody owes Abraham or owes Isaac a portion of their labor? Or are they a household, a different means by which they live in the world but not of the world, because Abraham wouldn't be a part of a city-state. Lot was absolutely terrified of not being a part of a city-state. Even when he knew the city was going to be destroyed, he didn't evidently know exactly how, he was afraid to leave. He clung to the security of the walls of Sodom, and was going to stay there, even though the walls of Sodom didn't protect him when the kings came for their revenge and to collect their tribute, because the king of Sodom and the king of Gomorrah had rebelled against their benefactors. Yes, they had benefactors for years and years and years. They paid a tribute into these benefactors who offered them a certain amount of protection. And then they rebelled against them, wouldn't pay anymore. And so Chaldamara comes with a whole army and defeats Bera, king of Sodom, who flees in the tar pits somewhere out there in the desert. And then Abraham goes to rescue his nephew. Just overnight, he goes to rescue his nephew and his nephew's family. And they defeat this king that everybody looked to for protection and his army overnight. He was able to do this. This is not a lone guy in a single tent with a couple of camels wandering around in the desert. They had been setting up altars. They were a civilization that was not always centered in a particular place. Although they talk about places, that he dwells between Kodesh and Shur and Gerar. And so you could think, well, Kodesh, that's one town, and then Shur over here, that's another town. And the area in between there, it's got a couple of wells around, and they live there, tending their flocks and carrying their tents around on the backs of camels. But is that really what the story is about? We've heard it so much that we believe that story is true. that story is exactly the way it was. Yet, in that story, all of a sudden, there's whole armies and battles and people defeated. And when Jacob's coming back, he positions his family to protect the family that he wanted to have. You know, he wanted to marry Rachel. And he was tricked by Laban. And so he ended up having other children by other wives. He took care of all of them, but he favored the one that he wanted to marry from the beginning. How did he get out there with Laban? Well, those are chapters 27, 28, and we'll see that progress. But it's very important, you know, like when Isaac sends Esau out to go hunting and get me some venison and come back and you know, he's going to supposedly bless him. And Rebecca gets wind of it. And you have this idea that, oh, he's just this lone hunter. He's already sold his birthright to his brother by that time because he came in, he was really hungry. He needed something to eat, and the refrigerator was empty. Oh, wait, there was no refrigerator. We have kind of a B-movie vision of what these people were doing. It is, even when the servant of Abraham goes to find a wife for Isaac, we know he takes 10 camels, but are there other people going along with him? You just didn't travel all over the place alone, especially if you had a certain amount of wealth with you. It was dangerous. It was dangerous to live outside the city walls of places like Sodom and Gomorrah, even Zoar, which was an insignificant little town. They still offered a certain amount of protection because there were bad guys. There was also wild animals, but there was the danger of bad guys coming along and stealing what you had. And this has been a conflict throughout history. This is why people gather in cities. One of the reasons. There's other reasons. And we've gone through a lot of that, and we're going to go through more. But right now, I wanted to take a little trip back to Genesis 25. We mentioned some of these things, like, did Jacob sod pottage? It says he sodded pottage. What is this pottage? Which is, it talks about having the, filled with lentils, and they have a word for lentils, and they even call it red pottage, and all these words have meanings, and when you go and study some of the Greek texts of the same Hebrew Bible, which, you know, in the Septuagint, they translated much of the Bible into the Septuagint at the time of Christ. They're quoting from that Septuagint. And so there was this Greek text, and one of the versions of it is the Apostolic Bible Polyglot, which is a Greek text, and I have links on our page at preparingyou.com so you can go look at it in the Greek text. And why is that important? They're translating Hebrew to Greek, and they're particularly picking certain Greek words to put in the text to best translate it. Well, they have sources of information about this journey of Abraham and this whole story of the Bible. And so they're picking certain words, and the words they pick have different meaning than simply boiling pottage. It, you know, the word pottage comes from the same word that they get this word sod, which they do translate it sod in the King James, boil in other versions. And but only once is it translated that way. Normally it's not. It's commonly translated, deal proudly, presumptuously, presume or be proud. It only appears once in the particular form that we see in this verse where it says he sodded pottage. When they translate it into the Greek word, in the Greek text, they also use a particular word. Epsema is the Greek that we see there translated like into stew. When you translate it from the Greek into the English, they'll say that it's translated stew, and supposedly simply means something boiled, some sort of food boiled, and we're led to believe that it's lentil stew. Does it really mean to boil? Well, there is some references in ancient texts where that particular version of the Greek word, which is echo, you know, you add letters also in Greek. You add other words together in Greek to make other words from a prime word, echo. Not quite like you do in Hebrew, because the letters in the Hebrew actually have a meaning. But they construct another word from this original word, echo, which means to hold or possess. So somehow or other we get this word and we're led to believe that it means to boil. Does it really mean to boil? And like I said, in some ancient texts they refer to it as boiling grape juice in order to make a syrup. So they're boiling something to make something sweeter. And of course, this boiled pottage is, he's going to give him something. Because he has a need, he is faint, he is failing, he's out in the field and he's failing, and we're thinking a lone hunter is out walking all day in the hot sun, and he comes back and I'm really hungry, I'm going to sell you my birthright for a taste of this pottage. And you can tell the story that way, and there might have even been an incident similar to that, where there was such a story that was, you know, happened that way. But these are not lone, isolated men most of the time. Now, when Jacob supposedly flees, we have a picture that Jacob is absolutely alone. He is not traveling with an entourage. He is just traveling by himself on foot across the desert. And that very well may have been. But we've seen in other verses in the Bible and other chapters in the Bible where somebody seems to be alone and then all of a sudden there's all kinds of other people with him that were with him all along. And so we get this kind of, like I say, B-movie picture of the Bible story, which is fine if you're telling a story to young kids. And the stories were told to young kids, and so they were written so that they weren't complicated in the telling of the story. But when you look at the actual Hebrew text, there's all kinds of extra meaning to it. And telling the story isn't bad, except for today we have the Muslim religion, the Jewish religion, the Christian religion, all claiming Abraham as one of their founding fathers of their religion. That they follow the faith of Abraham. But from my experience, most people haven't got a clue. You barely find it in the commentaries. Why Abraham was out there wandering around in the desert between Kadesh and Shur. In an area or realm called Gerar, a word that specifically means the cause and effect of spiritual and physical choices that we make in our life. That is what's happening in Gerar. That it is a place where cause and effect of your spiritual choices and your physical choices come together and create that effect. And Abraham and even Isaac is traveling between Kadesh, dwelling between Kadesh and Shur. And Kadesh meaning this separateness. Abraham is separating himself from the city-states. He's separating from Haran. He's separating from Ur. He's separating himself from Sodom. He won't even take a buckle from Sodom. Because there's something wrong with Sodom. Yeah, we think it's sodomy. But no, there's something more wrong with it. That God ends up sending a vision to Abraham of the smoking furnace and the burning lamp. I've added to that the page that covers that idea of the smoking furnace and burning lamp to try to go into it deeper and deeper, and we will by the time we get to this and we get caught up with we already have the studies from Genesis 41 on. And you can go read that. Our Exodus studies are up and available at preparingyou.com. But right now, we're going through this idea that we see in Genesis 25, where this pottage is not just pottage. It's not just lentil soup. That it's more. It's an offering in order to possess a right that Esau has. Somehow or other, it is supplying victuals or food of some sort or aid or assistance, probably not just to Esau, but to the whole body of those that Esau is taking care of and providing for in the household of Esau, which eventually will be the household of Isaac, which is the household of Abraham and Sarah, because, you know, Rebekah goes into the tent of Sarah. This is a whole entourage of people that are living out there without being a part of a city-state. And if you miss that in the story by focusing on the children's Bible approach, you may miss the whole meaning of what Abraham, Isaac, and eventually Jacob would be doing, and therefore what Israel was supposed to be doing, because Israel is the new name of Jacob eventually in his life travels. Again, travels between Kadesh, separateness, and spiritual awakening. That there is a reason Abraham had to get out of the city of his nativity. His family had moved to Haran. Both Terah and him were told to go down to Canaan. But Terah tarried and remained in Haran. But Terah was an idolater. So we've touched on that previously. And now I think we have recordings up on our page on Terah, also at Preparing You. So you can find out, why was Terah called an idolater? We have this idea that idolatry, you know, again, that B movie where people are all bowing down to a statue. And there's bald-headed priests going around burning incense to the statue. And that's idolatry. But Paul tells us covetousness is idolatry. And covetous is why God hates the deeds of the Nicolaitans. Covetousness brings you into the bondage of Egypt. And can bring you into the bondage of Sodom, where you're a human resource in Sodom. Peter tells you that. Covetous practices make you merchandise. make you a human resource. But we miss that when we reduce the Bible down to, you know, a five-year-old Bible story where people are just living out there in the desert and have these little events, but these little events have deeper meaning. So the words that we see in the Greek text also have this meaning of to hold and to possess. And they have, and both those words, sod and pottage, are coming from the same words in the Greek and in the Hebrew. And they mean something specific to the events of the story, but we don't want to get too complicated in it. But this whole idea of consenting and agreeing to things like, you know, Esau, I'm going to give up my birthright. We'll see it when Jacob receives his blessing from Isaac. Deceptively gets his blessing from Isaac, that Isaac intended to go to Esau. Yet, Isaac doesn't retract it. Doesn't retract his blessing and say, well, wait a minute, you got that under false pretenses. People are doing that all the time. When we touched on the fact that Bera had consented to the authority of these other kings who offered Sodom protection, that obviously the walls were protecting against minor thefts and, you know, small gangs or maybe even small armies that people can't just march into Sodom and steal stuff. They have gates of the city, protection. But what if a big army comes? Well, that's why you make allegiances and alliances with other city-states. They're going to come to your aid. You know, World War I was because all these different countries had treaties. Somebody gets assassinated, and it kind of snowballs into everybody going to war all around the world. And then, of course, World War II was far greater adventure, and World War III is going to be even bigger. So, but it's all because people make leagues and agreements by consent. But Esau gives his consent to Jacob that he can have his birthright, because he's got stuff. He's doing all right, but he's called a supplanter because of that in later chapters. So I can't prove that the pottage and the word sod there doesn't mean what people read it to be. But it's very clear that the definition of these words are more than just boiling lentils in a pot. And we're going to talk a lot about that when we return to the keys of the kingdom. So welcome back. So the idea of the, you know, like one of the words that we see here that is translated into this idea of pottage in the Hebrew, which we see it sodded the pottage. Both words having the same original origin. It appears as nazid in the Hebrew, with a nun, zayin, yad, delet, is the letters that we find there. They also mean arrogant and presumptuously, and not just boiled. And we see this same form of that word also that we see in Genesis 25, verse 29. We see it in 2 Kings, where they're talking about a big stew pot. And the stew pot there, the same word for stew pot, is the same word for cauldron. And it tells us over and over again, it talks about flesh pots. And And it talks about even in 2 Kings chapter 4, where these flesh pots are have no harm in them. But it says when they say, at least one place in Proverbs where it talks about, let us build us a city, and the city will be our cauldron, and we will be the flesh. And of course, this rings true of the New Testament where it says, be careful you do not bite one another. When would you bite one another? When you are in the cauldron. The city state. The city state that Abraham is trying to avoid. Because if you go into the city state, it alters the way you think. You make choices based on fear. Lot would not leave the city state. He literally had to be dragged out of the city-state. He wanted to go to another city-state. And even when he didn't work out going to the other city-state, he ended up living in a cave rather than going and joining Abraham. And so there's a lot more to these stories. So this, the flesh pots, the cities of blood that are mentioned over and over again in the Bible. The cauldron that is the city that binds the people together. How do they bind them together? With consent. And it says, if sinners entice thee, let us all have one purse. Where? In the city state. We're all in one pot. We all have one purse. You know, maybe it's a democracy and we elect a leader and he gets to take from the pot and redistribute what's in the pot. Which is everybody. So, hate doesn't, you don't bite your neighbor, he bites your neighbor. He takes from your neighbor to redistribute the wealth of the city for your benefit, for your protection, for your welfare. But David talks about a table that is for your welfare, that is a snare and a trap. How are you snared and trapped? By consent. This is what Abraham is avoiding. And he's learning to live without the protection of the city-state. The walls that are not just made to keep the bad guys out, but to keep you in. It's a whole way of thinking that early Americans were beginning to realize. Why? Because they were in the wilderness between Kadesh. They had left Europe. And sure, and struggling against the elements of the world as well as against hostile elements in the world, like people. I mean, it's obviously storms, droughts, famines. Just heard of another earthquake and a volcanic eruption that I've been kind of expecting for some time. And Mount Rainier is shaking. I have a daughter that is not right underneath Mount Rainier, but she lives up in that area. And they've had earthquakes up in that area. And so there could be another natural disaster, maybe multiple natural disasters. There's rumors of wars going on. They're crying peace, peace, trying to get to peace. But the economy is shaky. The dollar is weak. Politicians are corrupt. And even when you find the corruption, people complain that you're exposing the corruption and protesting against exposing the corruption. The strange world we live in. But we live in the city. We live in the cauldron today. Most people do. I'm kind of out in the country. But most people live in the cauldron. And it's very distracting. And these Bible stories, when we try to reduce them down to the idea of, I need some of that red lentil soup because I am so hungry, we don't see the bigger picture of what's going on. If the sin of Edom is that he sells his birthright for the sake of his appetite, then that would be the error of Balaam as well, and the deeds of the Nicolaitan. If you go read an article on Nicolaitan or Balaam, because they are equated in the Bible as, you know, different ways of talking about the same thing. Nicolaitan means conquered people, Nicolaity. And Balaam means conquered people. How are they conquered? They're conquered by their appetite and consent, which is why Proverbs tells you that if you have an appetite for the dainties of rulers, put a knife to your throat, for he serves you deceitful meats. And those, they may be deceitful meats, but they still are a snare and a trap. You'll still be snared and trapped. But worse yet, you'll begin to think differently because you are not separate from this, the world, the city and the world. Jesus talks about being separate, living in the world, but not of the world. So that you're in the world, but you're separate from the world. In other words, you're not eating at the tables of the world. You're not developing an appetite for benefits and the habit of receiving them at the expense of others. Because if that is your habit, you are engaged in covetous practices. You will go into bondage. You will become merchandise. And you will curse your children. If you're following the ways of Abraham, you will not be eating at the tables of men who exercise authority one over the other. If you are following Moses, all your offerings would be free will offerings. All your Corban would be free will offerings. If you're following Herod and the Pharisees, your offerings will be compelled offerings. And you'll be back in the bondage of Egypt. This is what these stories are all pointing to. And yet, the modern, you know, Christian, the modern Jew, the modern Muslim, they all eat the dainties of rulers, of men who exercise authority one over the other. They all have one purse and they take away from one group within their civil society and give to another. And they don't see anything wrong with that because they pay in. But it changes the way you think. You begin to become, like Polybius says, perfect savages. You'll burn down your own communities. You burn down the very store your mother buys groceries at. You'll loot to get stuff you don't even need. And you'll feel justified in it. So, this is what Abraham is trying to find his way away from. And not be a part of. To be separate from. And very clearly, Christ tells us to be separate from that too. Paul tells us to not be covetous, because covetousness is idolatry. If that is the case, most churches, synagogues, and mosques promote idolatry, because they say it's okay to covet your neighbor's goods through men who exercise authority. Just recently, a Presbyterian group, they own stock, and they're trying to get those corporations to be more abortion friendly. They're a Presbyterian church, and they're using their leverage because they own stock in that business to promote more abortion and make it more readily available, because some states you can't get an abortion in as easily as you used to be able to, because that's been, since Roe versus Wade, that's been turned over to, you know, the states to make those decisions. So some people have to go out of state to get an abortion. So the Presbyterian Church is trying to, because of the fact it owns so much stock, this is the bigger organization of Presbyterian churches, that they're promoting abortion. They want the companies to make abortion more readily available as a part of their reproductive health care. Now, some people that might be hearing that thinks, well, that makes sense. And other people should be absolutely appalled at it and think, like, oh, that is just so crazy. But that's how people are being divided so much. But the people who are appalled at that, do they realize that their system is empowering that wickedness in their midst? That's why Sodom had so much wickedness in the streets. It wasn't the sodomy and the homosexuality and the gender confusion that was going on in Sodom that was the sin. That was the product of the sin. That was the byproduct of the sin, is that confusion, because the families were breaking down. Even Lot's family was breaking down. They weren't dependent upon one another through free will offerings at the altars of Abraham, but they were dependent upon the government taking from the citizens and dividing and protecting the people. They probably had some say-so. They evidently had a Supreme Court. We know they had a Supreme Court because of the fact that they had five judges. And it appears, according to some writings, that Lot was the top judge. And that would make sense, since terror was well known throughout the world. Had been working with Nimrod. Was an idolater, but idolatry, that's a good thing to a lot of people. And what was idolatry? Let's build us a city. And we be the flesh. Let's all have one purse. And provide for our daily welfare through having one purse. Democratic socialism. But they don't realize that this will degenerate the thinking of the people until they find once more a monarch and a king after becoming perfect savages, filled with chaos, fighting one another. So anyway, very important to understand these things. You can go look at our pages. I have lots of links there and show you the different words. Why, you know, these words, you know, like the normal word for boiling would be rathach. And that would be the normal Hebrew word for boiling. And nowhere else is the word that we find there, you know, sod, pottage, translated to sod. It's only translated there. Normally it means this, you know, acting arrogantly in order to hold a possession. That's really what they're talking about. But it makes an interesting story. And if you knew Hebrew and you knew the meaning of all the letters and you knew all the stuff that we're sharing with you with, you know, I don't know how many footnotes I have on that particular page, over 30 footnotes where we show you the definitions and then dozens and dozens of links to other pages so you can go look at the Greek text yourself and the other supporting articles. But we were going to talk about Genesis 26, and that's, you know, God's promise to Isaac. So now we're going from Abraham to Isaac. And guess what? There's another famine. There was a famine in the land besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went unto Abimelech, king of the Philistines, unto Gerar. And again, that sounds like, okay, there's some guy named Abimelech who's the king of the Philistines. And it could be. But this is a long time later. Is he still king? And there's a huge debate. Is this the son of Abimelech who's the king of the Philistines? Well, the word Abimelech is not a name. It means the father king. That's what it means. Melech being king, Abba or Ab meaning father. So the Philistines have a father king. Jesus says, call no man on earth father, but my father. And of course, you go read our article also at Preparing You on Father. There's links to it on this page. You'll see that when he said that to the crowd, everybody in the crowd knew what he was talking about. Because everybody knew who the father of the state was. The father of Rome. You know, Julius Caesar, Augustus Caesar, Tiberius Caesar, they were all called father. Patronus. And they held this position of authority, not over a little city-state like Sodom or Zoar, but over the entire Roman Empire. They were the Patronus. Even the Senate was called Conscripti Patri, conscripted fathers, because that's where your benefits came from. They were going to pass a law. Everybody's excited about the fact that, I guess, 28 of the executive orders of Donald Trump have been codified to one degree or another in what they call the Big Beautiful Bill. They may not be calling it by the time some people listen to this recording, but that's because he passed these laws, and now the Congress and Senate has gone and codified them. Well, the same thing was going on in Rome. They didn't have an emperor for 500 years. Emperor means commander-in-chief. They didn't have a president of Rome for 500 years after they had revolted against the Tarquinian kings and thrown them out. 500 years, no president. They did, you know, there was fluctuations in the republic and the way in which they were organized over that 500 years. And they were warned 150 years before the first emperor, at least 100 years before the first emperor, that when the people, because of their appetite for benefit and the habit of receiving them at the expense of others, which is a covetous practice, were going to be instituting the rule of force and violence in order to take from one class of citizens to give to another, that they would degenerate into perfect savages, finding once more a monarch and a king. That was 150 years before Christ, and by the time Christ came along, the first emperor of Rome had already risen to power. And he was the Patronus of Rome. And he was the father of Rome. And all the little senators were the little fathers, the conscripted fathers. But in Abraham's household, Abraham was the father of his household, but everybody was father of their own families. Same with Moses. But Abimelech, father king of the Philistines, in this area called Gerar, which means Gimel Resh Resh, cause and effect of our physical and spiritual choices, Isaac went near these father kings. And in verse 2 it says, and the Lord appeared unto him and said, go not down into Egypt. Egypt means bondage. Go not down into bondage. Just dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of. Dwelling in the land instead of going down into bondage is like saying live in the world but not of the world. Because we know if you eat of the table of Abimelech, then you will go into bondage. Because what was meant for your welfare will be a snare and a trap. So don't go into bondage. You can go down to that area, dwell there amongst those people, but don't make a covenant with them. Don't become an idolater like your you know, Terah, your grandfather. Don't do that. Because that will bring you back into bondage. So it says in verse 3, sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee. Sojourn. Just live in the world, not of the land. I will be with you, and will bless thee. And unto thee and unto thy seed, I will give all these countries, lands. And I will perform the oath which I swear unto Abraham thy father. Because Abraham is his father, not Abimelech, the father kings of the Philistines. You have to remember, even the word Philistines may not be specifically Philistines at that time, but somebody had a particular characteristic as Philistines. And I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of heaven, and will give unto thy seed all these countries. And thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. What seed? Is that this simply the seed of his loins? He's not alone here. He's traveling with a lot of people, many of whom may not be hardly related to him. But he's father to these people. But he's not Abimelech. He's not father king. He's father compassionate, father caring, father benevolent. They don't have to give to him, but they choose to sacrifice on his altars to take care of one another. Free will sacrifices. No leaven. No oppression, because that word leaven means oppression. You will read our article on leaven. It means oppression. So, we see that he's saying, I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of the heaven, and will give unto thy seed these countries. And thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because Abraham is his father. This was a big discussion with Jesus. They said, Abraham is our father. Didn't they say that? But no. Abraham was not necessarily their father, because they weren't living according to the will of Abraham. It says in verse 5, because that Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. Is he talking about the Ten Commandments here? Because we didn't have the Ten Commandments yet. Of course, those Ten Commandments are these ten statements that Moses brought down from the mountain. But we know those ideas of natural law pre-existed the Ten Commandments. We commemorate that nice summary into those ten statements. But the law, the charges of God, already existed way back in the days of Enoch. Way back in the days of Adam and Eve. It's built into nature. That if you steal, you'll be stolen from. If you covet, people will covet what you have. If you murder, you will be murdered. And this is the cause and effect. And you should be able to see the cause and effect in those commandments, those statutes. And I'll put links in the page there so you can go and read our article on commandments and get a better idea of what the commandments are really all about, because a lot of people don't really know. They're confused about what the Sabbath is, why you make no covenants. Of course, if you made covenants, you'd be in Egypt. You'd be back in the bondage of Egypt. where at least 20% of your labor wouldn't belong to you anymore. We'll be back. So, Abraham is obeying the charges and commandments and statutes of God. His laws, his Torah. He's not coveting his neighbor's goods. Even when he had a right to take the spoils that he had saved from Sodom by saving all those people from who were being taken off into bondage, he wouldn't take anything for it. For years he took care of those many souls that followed him out of the city. You know, people who were literally princes and princesses followed Abraham and lived as Abraham explained, by faith, hope, and charity. That's what Abraham was doing, living by faith, hope, and charity, not by contracts that make you someone who is enslaved, where you no longer own your rights. You own some of them. You know, like the bondage of Egypt, 20% of your labor belonged to the government, the other 80% belonged to you. And you were not to go back to Egypt again. We can all go see the pyramids, that's not going back to Egypt. Going into bondage is going back to Egypt. And so in verse 6 it says, and Isaac dwelt in Gerar, in the place that is Gimel Resh Resh. And actually they write it, be it Gimel Resh Resh. Be it is the letter for household. But he lived there. He dwelt there. He didn't make a covenant with the father kings, the men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority one over the other. Something Jesus told us not to do. We weren't to be like them. Something Proverbs tells us to do. Not eat at the tables for that should be for our welfare but are actually a snare because we consent to the authority of the men who control the tables. And we go back into the bondage of Egypt. We go back to Egypt if we do that. But your churches aren't telling you this. They're doing all kinds of other things. They're not telling you this. What are they doing? They're tickling your ears, telling you that you're saved already. You just have to believe in Jesus. You don't have to do what he says. You just have to believe in him. Because he's done it all. But Jesus says, not those who say, but those who actually do. So who do we believe? Do we believe the doctrines of men or the doctrines of Jesus? Because they're not lining up. And of course, what's happened is that our thinking has been changed and now we think it's okay to covet our neighbor's goods. Well, Terah thought it was okay to covet his neighbor's goods through these systems set up by men like Nimrod, who was a mighty provider instead of the Lord. But Abraham was looking for the provisions of the Father in heaven, not the fathers of earth. And the righteous king of peace, Melchizedek, that's what that means. Melchizedek, king of Salem, blessed Abraham. Because Abraham was not engaged in the covetous practices. He was thinking according to the way of God. And that's different than people are thinking today. They're not thinking like that. They're thinking that it's okay to covet my neighbor's goods. But it's not. And we really shouldn't be doing it. But people don't want to see it. They don't want to do things the way Christ said to do them. And they want to do things the way Christ said not to do them. And certainly people who claim to follow Abraham are doing things not the way that Abraham did. And at the time of Jesus, the Pharisees were claiming Abraham was their father. Yet they set up a system of sacrifice, korban, that means sacrifice in the Hebrew, that made the word of God to none effect. And we've explained that, and you can go read the details of the article, but Herod and the Pharisees had set that system up. And what happens is that once you start turning a blind eye to the simplicity of the gospel, to the simplicity of what Abraham was avoiding, what Isaac was avoiding, you begin to not understand the gospel. So you have to pay preachers something to give you a gospel you can understand. So they reduce it down to this B-movie, child Bible study where you don't really understand the depths of it. And then you end up like the Presbyterian Church USA, that's what they are, PCUSA, sponsored a shareholder proposal number 6. You can actually, if you look under talk of our Genesis 26, we have the details and links, so you can go read it for yourself. They want abortion more available. And the secular board of directors, this was the board of directors of the Presbyterian, who proposed this proposal 6. The secular board of directors of the company, they're defending. They don't want to do that. And just the company, it could be almost any company, but it happens to be Albertsons. You know, grocery store, but they own stock in Albertsons for their board of pensions. The pensions aren't for the people, that's for the ministers. See, Abraham was taking care of the people. That was, your social security was in the fact that you were following Abraham and the ways of Abraham. But for the Pharisees, their social security was in their korban set up by the civil government. By Herod, going out and baptizing people into membership, into his civil insurance. And they could be taken care of anywhere. They were issued a number or name, a Hebrew name, which includes a number. And they could get benefits anywhere they were at, where there was an outlet for Herod throughout the Roman Empire. It was backed by the treasury that was in the temple. It wasn't backed by the people. See, the kingdom of heaven, you invest in the people. And the people who live by faith and hope, you will be there for them. But when you go to the system of entitlements, that all goes out of your thinking. But anyway, Albertson said they already offered a comprehensive competitive health benefits. They continue to monitor the changes in applicable laws and regulations, and proposal imposes unnecessary burdens with any meaningful benefit. The scope of the requested report that the Presbyterians were asking for was overly broad and burdensome. So they opposed this Proposition 6. And I don't know when the vote is, I don't know, but this will be nationwide where the Presbyterian Church of the USA is wanting abortion more available to his followers. This is not of Christ. This is of the adversary. And that's where people have gone. They've gone the way of the adversary. But they still profess Christ, but they don't know him. Just like the Pharisees didn't really know Abraham, or they wouldn't have come up with their scheme with using Herod, why Jesus says, beware of the leaven, the oppression of Herod and the Pharisees. Because if you follow them, you'll go down into Egypt again. He's saying, live in the world, but not of the world. You go to church to pray for your needs, and hopefully the other fellow congregants will be there for you. But Jesus wasn't created isolated home churches. He was creating a network that reached all across the Roman Empire right away. Where when the famines came then, and the volcanic eruptions came then, and the wars came then, the Christians could help one another in an international system of faith, emergency, ministry, auxiliaries. Taking care of one another, not through force, not through the institution of violence, not through covetous practices, but through the way of righteousness. Because they were willing to think in the terms of the ways of righteousness. Because they lived in the world, but not of the world. They dwelt in Gerar, in the land of cause and effect. So verse 7, and the men of the place asked him of his wife, and he said, she is my sister. For he feared to say, she is my wife, lest said he, the men of the place, should kill him for Rebekah, because she was fair to look upon. And it came to pass, this is just what Abraham had gone through. Except, she was his sister. Rebekah is really kind of a cousin. And it came to pass when he had been there a long time that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out at a window and saw, and behold, Isaac was sporting with Rebekah, his wife. Sporting with her evidently means something more than just, sister, brother, or sister stuff. He's sporting with Rebekah as his wife. And Abimelech called Isaac and said, behold, of a surety, she is thy wife. And how saidest thou, she is my sister? And Isaac said unto him, because I said, lest I die for her. He feared and said this little fib. And Abimelech said, what is this thou hast done unto us? One of the people might lightly have leaned with thy wife, and thou shouldest have brought what? A curse on them? Why, they must have had, thou shalt not commit adultery. Already brought guiltiness upon us. So they already knew thou shalt not commit adultery in the sense of taking another man's wife. They knew that. No Ten Commandments. Those laws already existed. That's why back up there in verse 5 he's saying, keep my charges, keep my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. The Ten Commandments were not a new thing. They were a very old thing, stated new in a nice 10 or so statements so that you can understand them, because some of them have a little bit of explanation with them. But ultimately, what you need is the comforter that guides you and shows you these things, because these are discernible in nature, these laws. And the cause and effect of, if you go this way, it's going to produce a different outcome. If you go around killing everybody you're mad at, you're going to have a very chaotic society. You look at some of the cultures where rape is common and their culture, and then they move to Sweden or they move to England and they have rape gangs going around. Well, we always rape in our culture. Well, evidently in Abimelech culture, you know, culture, they did not rape. And he didn't like the fact that they were lied to. He says, this is dangerous. You're going to bring evil upon us. See, many cultures don't realize the reason their country is so broke and opportunities are so poor and they want to immigrate to the places in Europe where there's lots of money and there's lots of opportunity and lots of jobs and everything. They're going to go up there and get some of that because those people just have white privilege or something. Now, the reason their country is in a shambles is because they don't keep the charges, the commandments, and the statutes, and the laws. They don't even know they need to keep them. They have chosen not to know because they should be self-evident that if you undermine the family, you undermine society because society is born in the family. That's where it comes from the family. And when you make your rulers your father, you diminish your natural father. Everybody, oh, we don't want to be in the patriarchy. Oh, the patriarchy is bad, where men are in charge of women. Let's make presidents in charge of women. Let's make Congress in charge of women. They'll make the laws. They've codified at least 28 of the executive orders. That's your daddy. That's your father. That's your conscripted fathers. By looking to Congress to fix things, by looking to the president to fix things, you not only burden them with power, and we know power corrupts, so you're the source of the corruption of Congress. Democrat, Republican, doesn't make any difference. You're corrupting Congress because you're giving it more and more power. And you're corrupting your presidencies, your prime ministers, whatever country you're in, because you're giving up your responsibility to take care of the needy of society through pure religion. Religion was how you took care of the needy of society. If you took care of them through covetous practices by giving power to the government to take from your neighbor to provide you with free stuff, you decrease the power in your own family. There's only so much power. You gave some power to the government. You gave some power to your presidents, your prime ministers, like you did in Australia. And they went crazy during COVID. They threw people in jail. They arrested people on the street because their mask was down. Crazy. Because they didn't get a jab. Because you created the monster. You created the beast by going down into Egypt. By making covenants with men who exercise authority to take a bite out of your neighbor to provide you with benefits. That's going to end badly. Abraham was discovering it. Abimelech understood more about the law in some ways than even Isaac and Abraham. But he didn't understand that you do not want to make the state your father. Because it will eventually undermine your family. And then nobody will take care of your elderly parents but the state. You won't do it. You won't take care of the needy in your community. That's the job of the government. Well, if that's the job of the government, then the government's your father. It's not the God the Father. It's not the God of Abraham. It's not the God of Moses. It's somebody else. You've given them the power. You've consented. You guys can have this power, just make sure that I'm taken care of. That's going to end badly. So, in verse 11, and Abimelech, father king, charged all his people, saying, he that touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. And I have a whole article on put to death, because put to death shows up a lot of times in the Bible. And does it really mean put to death? Maybe. Maybe not. So, verse 12. Then Isaac sowed in the land and received in the same year 100-fold. And the Lord blessed him. So as he is sowing in the land, is it just planting crops? Is it preaching another way? Are more people going to follow Isaac out when the famine is over, where he goes somewhere else? So that's a good question, because Isaac grew, you know, 100-fold. That's a lot. And the man waxed great and went forward and grew until he became very great. So this is not isolated Isaac, and so we should not think of isolated Jacob and isolated Esau. Now, because Jacob got the blessing when he crossed out over the desert, he went another way, probably by himself, and arrived at Laban. And then when he came back, though, he had herds and flocks and children and servants and all kinds of people. He was coming, everything that he had got in the blessing, he had left behind for Esau. Esau had access to, I mean, technically it was Jacob's, based on the promise of Isaac. But Esau was in charge of it. And then he comes back and he wasn't sure if Esau had settled down or Esau was still going to kill him. So he was guarded, but did not come back alone, because the blessing caused an increase. And you have to realize, but the increase is more important that we increase in wisdom and righteousness. And then when we need the wealth will be there. A lot of people won't believe that, because it's just this old guy on the desert telling you, but that's the way it worked. And it says, it has a particular word there where it says, and he waxed great. But we won't look at that right now. We'll keep moving along here. So, for he had possessions of flocks and possessions of herds and great stores of servants. And I even put the Hebrew word there, Vav Uda. And the Philistines envied him. So the Philistines had their system, but they envied him because he was more success than them. And it was because the people that followed him and were instilled with this seed of faith, living by faith rather than living by force, will inevitably be more productive people. People say in churches, oh, we couldn't take care of the social welfare. There's enough funds, you know, if somebody gets sick and we'll be bankrupt. I tell you that the Presbyterians will be bankrupt before God will be, because they've abandoned God in order to kill God's children in the womb. Crazy. They don't see it, though. But people still go to... Now, admittedly, I think 50,000 members have dropped away in the last year or so. But still many people go there. And they think they're saved, because they believe in Jesus and they're following abortionists, pro-abortionist. But now, just because you're anti-abortion doesn't mean that you're not an idolater. Ask yourself, am I back in the bondage of Egypt? How did I get here? Am I undermining the father of my household by going to the fathers of the earth? You see, it used to be that if you wanted to get married, Isaac wanted to get married, his father arranged it. And you know, that sounds pretty bad. Well, Samson wanted to get married. He went and asked his father for permission. Today, everybody goes and asks the state. And they get a marriage license. And they get their priests and their pastors to go down and get a license from the state to perform a state marriage. A state marriage is a threesome. It's you, your spouse, and the state. Because that's, the state's your father. That's where you go to get your benefits. That's where you go to get your welfare. You're empowering them, and power corrupts. And so you wonder why you have a corrupt government. It's because you're corrupt. Because you're an idolater. Because you're going the wrong way and becoming a surety. But we'll talk more about that when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom after another brief break. Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. So, we're seeing Isaac is learning some of the same lessons that Abraham learned, but there's even more going on here because he goes and he talks about how the Philistines envied him because he became wealthier and wealthier. But in verse 15, for all the wells which his father's servants had digged in the days of Abraham, his father, the Philistines had stopped them and filled them with earth. Now that's a strange thing to do. You're in a desert climate and you're filling in wells with dirt. That's a lot of work. Is that really what was happening? Well, maybe it did. I don't know. Sounds strange. But I know that wells are more than just wells. They're sources. Jesus talks about it. Using the metaphors. Going to the woman at the well. Talking about a well that you can drink that you will not thirst. Because he understands that these wells of water are metaphors for sources of what? Welfare. Water is one of the greatest welfares that you can get. I mean, like, you need water. You can go without food for a while, but you're not going without water for very long. These sources, these systems, and of course, now I can show you in America, American Revolution. They were organized in the tens, hundreds of thousands all across America. When the guys were writing saying the British are coming, they went and they told 10 guys, and those 10 guys told 10 more guys, and those guys told 10 more guys, and this is how they stopped forest fires. This is how they protected against attacks by the French or Indians. This is what they did when there was droughts and famine. They had a network where they could help one another. And that's all been lost. Since FDR, we don't have any of that in place anymore. Affluence took away a lot of it. Civil War took away a lot of it. But people still were helping one another out. I mean, the cities were safe places to be. You know, you'd be in Harlem. You weren't hearing gunshots. You could sleep in the park. You were safe. But now we don't care for one another anymore. We don't provide protection. There's no hue and cry in America. We've lost that. We're not listening to the voice of our neighbor. We're listening to the voice of CNN or NBC or CBS, and they're not telling us the truth. Or maybe the Presbyterian Church, or you know, our mosque, or our you know, synagogue. And they may not be telling us the truth. So what's going on? What's happening? That this is all taking place. Why are we not seeing the truth? Because we've been following blind guides who don't know the way. And the wells have been filled in. Those sources, you don't go to your neighbor. People just don't go to their neighbor anymore. A lot of times they don't even know who their neighbor is. So, and Abimelech said to Isaac, "Go from us, for thou art much mightier than we." And Isaac departed thence and pitched his tent in the valley of Gerar and dwelt there. So he wasn't in the towns anymore. He went out in the country because they were envious and jealous. They didn't want him around. And Isaac digged again the well of water which they had digged in the days of Abraham the father, for the Philistines had stopped them after the death of Abraham, and he called their names after the names by which his father had called them. So these wells are sources, you know, and it says, you know, Jacob goes out and builds an altar. What's that altar? He builds an altar, and then people can go and give at that altar and take care of the needy of society. If you don't understand that the altars of Abraham and the altars of Isaac and the altars of Jacob and the altars of Moses were systems of social welfare that depended upon free will offerings, you're going to miss a great deal of the message of the Bible. Everybody thinks, oh, well, this was like kind. No, it was what Jesus was doing. It was taking care of the needy through pure religion, through faith, hope, and charity. Thereby creating the natural bonds of a free society. When you went to the tables of FDR and the tables of LBJ, the well those resources dried up. They filled them in with WIC and FEMA and Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and all these other programs. They filled in the natural wells of society that take care of the needy of society. So you're going to have to go back to the ways of Abraham. Back to the ways of Moses. Back to the ways of Jesus Christ. Because this is what the early church was doing. And you're going to have to dwell in a different place. In a different way. Not according to idolatry. But according to righteousness. That's what you're going to have to do. So, Isaac's servants digged in the valley and found there a well of springing water. And the herdsmen, shepherds, we could call them, of Gerar, did strive with Isaac's shepherds. What are shepherds? Well, we still call pastors, you know, preachers, except for the fact they're just tickling your ears. They're not actually taking care of the needy. They aren't pulling water from the well to give to the needy of society like Rebecca did. They're not doing that. But that's what they're talking about here. The shepherds of Gerar did strive with Isaac's shepherds, saying, "The water is ours." And he called the name of the well Esek, because they strove with him. Why was Stephen martyred? People were donating. Stephen was one of the seven men chosen because they were honorable men and appointed to take care of the tables of the vast Christian community that reached all over the Roman Empire. Because most of those seven men lived long ways away from each other, all over the Roman Empire. Why were they so spread out? I thought they were going to serve pancakes at breakfast. It says wait on tables, except for the same word for tables is the same word for bank. Yeah, these were the bankers of the kingdom. I don't like to use the word banker because they weren't doing banking for profit. Most banking today is profit banking. But there are institutions that have access to banking, but not for profit. As a matter of fact, they're forbidden to have profit. And the seven men who organize those institutions all over the world can't receive a salary. They're not going to receive wages. That's what Peter was doing. Go read our article, Seven Men, at preparingyou.com. Find out what they were really doing. So maybe you can start really being a Christian and stop going to the men who are stopping up the wells of Abraham, Isaac, Moses, and Jesus Christ and the apostles. Because you're going to have to learn to take care of one another. Because there's always going to be another famine coming. And so you're going to need to find out what a real shepherd is supposed to be doing to take care of the flocks. And they will strive with you just like they strove with Stephen. Follow the money. Jesus kicked out the money changers. Read an article on money changers. Find out what they were really doing. And Stephen was receiving money and they accused him of subverting funds. And so that they had to turn everything around. So they're saying the water is ours, and the Pharisees said the money that Stephen is getting is ours. And it goes on to say, and they digged another well and strove for that also, and he called the name of it Sitna. And there's meaning in these words, and we can look at that later. And he removed from thence and digged another well for that they strove not. And he called the name Rehoboth. And he said, for now the Lord hath made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land. So he didn't fight them for it. And this actually is a very clear message to me. Because I see, and I've been watching some things going on in the news lately, and I was thinking, it sounds good, but it doesn't sound good. There's something wrong with that. Well, that was probably Sitna and Essek wells, and we need to dig the Rehoboth well. And of course, I can see the Hebrew letters, so I know what those letters are, and it means something. It's not important that I tell you. It's important that you listen to the Holy Spirit and start finding that meaning yourself. You have to dig into your own heart and find the well you need to find. And in verse 23 he says, and he went up from thence to Beersheba. What's Beersheba? We've talked about that. Especially with, Jacob going into bondage and all that stuff when we were after chapters 41, etc. Beersheba is a well deep inside your own hearts and your minds. And it's the well by which you communicate with the Holy Spirit within you. But you're not going to see that unless, Gerar, Gimel, cause and effect, that's what the letter means. Resh, resh, double resh. Resh in spirit, resh in physical world. You cannot covet your neighbor's goods and understand and think that's okay and understand the fullness of the Holy Spirit. You need to conform physically so that the Spirit can enter in to you spiritually and awaken you spiritually. This is going between, so you fast in Kadesh through this separation, not eating of the tables of Egypt, because they do lead to bondage, between Kadesh and Shur. The spiritual awakening. That's what sure means. But if you're going to indulge in the corruption of the world and the covetous practices and people worry about sodomy and murder, and of course those are all bad things, but covetousness is in the same list. Desiring benefits at the expense of your neighbor. Going to men who exercise authority one over the other to obtain your benefits. Jesus forbids that time and time again. So if you're going to find the well of Beersheba in your own heart, you need to repent, think differently, and begin to become a doer of the word. Gather together, not for what you can get, but for what you can share with others in righteousness. So verse 24, and the Lord appeared unto him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham, thy father. Fear not, for I am with thee and will bless thee and multiply thy seed for my servant Abraham's sake. So now he's tracking with his father on earth, and his father in heaven. That's where you need to go. So, verse 25. And he built an altar there and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there. And there Isaac's servants digged a well. And Abimelech went to him from Gerar. And Azuath, one of the friends, and Pichol, the chief captain of his army. And Isaac said unto them, wherefore come ye to me, seeing ye hate me, and have sent me away from you? And they said, we saw certain that the Lord was with thee. And we said, let there be now an oath betwixt us, even betwixt us and thee, and let us make a covenant with thee. If only the Pharaoh of Egypt had done that instead of charged with his chariots to take a spoil. Different outcomes. Why are they going to his altars? They could go to those same people that, the king of Sodom had gone to and signed up for tribute, made a league with them. But they didn't. In verse 28, and they said, we saw certainly that the Lord was with thee. That's important. They could see it. They had the eyes to see it. But if you're going to follow blind guides, you won't have eyes to see it. Verse 29, that thou wilt do us no hurt, as we have not touched thee, as we have done unto thee nothing but good, and have sent thee away in peace. Thou art now the blessed of the Lord. And he made them a feast, and they did eat and drink. Was it just a one-time feast, or did he set up them as part of the network? And they rose up betimes in the morning and sware one to another, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. You see, Christ brings the peace of Christ, which is not established by military might. It's established by the might of God. And it came to pass the same day that Isaac's servants came and told him concerning the well which they digged, and said unto them, we have found water. And he called Sheba, therefore the name of the city is Beersheba unto this day. So anyway, there's another little brief section that has been placed at the end of this chapter where it says Esau was 40 years old when he took his to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri, the Hittite, and Bashemath, and daughter of Elam, the Hittite, which were grief of mind unto Isaac and to Rebekah. So there was some conflict there, and we're going to see more of that later on when we go through the other subsequent chapters. So it's just very important to summarize this, is that Ebimelech means Ab-Melech, father king. And so these were people that were making government their father. This would be undermining them in their family. While Abraham, you know, his original name, Ab, father, and an unused word, Ram, which became Abraham after the blessing of Melchizedek, the righteous king of peace. And why was he righteous? It's because he was supported by tithings, free will offerings, not forced offerings. Abimelech, forced offerings. But he was still somewhat of a moral guy and benevolent, and you can do it that way. But there are dangers, and you should be aware of the dangers. And some people have to bless the world by showing them that there is a better way than force and fear and fealty. And that is faith, hope, and charity. Understanding these distinctions between the nature and these manner of governing people may help everybody understand the purposes of Abraham's journey in faith, and therefore also understand the doctrines of Jesus Christ. What did Christ mean when he says in Matthew 23:9-12, call no man father? And so we have links right there to the articles, and we've already explained that. Very important to understand that if you're making the government, giving power to decide the distribution of the wealth of your family to government, you know what will happen? He will take 10%, 20%, 30%, 40%, 50%. And then he will take it from all kinds of other things, because you won't own your land and you won't own your children, and he can actually take your children away from you. He can do all these things. And he can even put an inheritance tax on you. So when you die, he will rob the widows and orphans. And it will be codified that it is okay to rob the widows and orphans with an inheritance tax. That's what will happen. Oh, wait a minute. It's already happened, hasn't it? So anyway, so, you know, King Bera, you know, when we go to verse 14, I explain how King Bera was paying tribute to Jeldor Laomer. And that they were offering him protection, because these were leagues, and we were to make no covenants, no leagues, according to the Ten Commandments, and this is why. Now, you can do it, but you're going to pay the consequences. You can eat at the tables of men who exercise authority, but you will become merchandise. You will curse your children with debt. And then you could just watch the news, and you know that's true. So, that they do in the text, and I go through some of this in the side panel, where they modify the word for serve. Though silently rendered in most English verses, its presence guides, there's this actual extra elif tav that they don't translate. Well, elif is the relationship of God and man, you know, the divine spark between God and man. And tav is faith. See, if you're living by entitlements, you're not living by faith. But we see this idea of living by faith expressed in the text by letters that are not even translated. And we see it in 26:14, and we also see it in Job. first chapter of Job. His substance also was 7,000 sheep and 3,000 camels and 500 yoke of oxen, 500 she-asses, and very great household. That's the word that they put there. Servants as a household. Isaac had servants, but they were in his household. They weren't subject to him. They tithed at his altars and took care of the needy of their society. They weren't a city where we're all a cauldron. They weren't a city of blood. They weren't these cauldrons where we be the flesh taking a bite out of one another. That was done by free will offerings. There was no oppression, no yeast. And in order to get to that point, you have to have circumcision of the heart. You have to be gathering together, not for what you can get, but for what you can give. You have to have the spirit of Christ's sacrifice. He didn't come to save himself. You don't gather together to save yourself. You don't hide in your city-states to save yourself like Lot. You come to share in righteousness and faith with one another. You start doing that, you'll be the church. You'll be Christ's holy church. And until you start doing that, all I can say is peace on your house and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.